This is Ken Schreiner, the voice of the Green Arrow.
This is George Newbern, the voice of Superman.
You are listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam.
Streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
The original Justice League has become a memory.
I am resigning from the Justice League.
What's going to happen to the League now?
We rebuild from the ashes of that great conflict. A new team has arisen. A much, much bigger team.
Each of you brings something different to the table.
Old friends, new heroes. And as usual, plenty of bad guys jumping up to get beat down.
Calm down, and I'll let you go.
How about you kiss my ass?
Watch out, evildoers. There's nowhere to run. Because this year, they're all around you. The League is unlimited. All-new original series, starring every superhero worth cheering for. And then some. Justice League Unlimited.
Where am I exactly?
Among friends.
There's strength in numbers.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 276 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal, with me, my good friend, good brother, the man that runs our social media accounts. It's Liam. Liam, we are turning the calendar page and starting a new month after spending an entire month celebrating writer Len Yulee with a month of static episodes that he was responsible for penning. We are turning the page and we are headed back to talk a little bit about Justice League Unlimited, which ends up being some of our most listened to episodes, most popular amongst listeners. And man, we left things off with a cliffhanger and we hit the ground running, picking right back up where we left off.
That's right. We ended on something of a cliffhanger last time we were reviewing Justice League Unlimited. And here we are picking up that thread with the episode entitled Flashpoint. Not the one you're thinking of, though.
not the movie of the same name, not the comic book storyline of the same name, and not the loosely based script for what the Flash movie reportedly was just based on also. No, this is its own thing and has very little to do with the Flash at all. He is in the episode, though. But yes, we will get into breaking down this week's episode, which originally aired here in the States on the Cartoon Network on July the 2nd, 2005, meaning we just recently passed the 18-year anniversary of this episode's debut. And before we get into our breakdown of our four categories of plot, animation and visuals, music, and voice acting, we will, of course, get to this week's official Internet Movie Database, the IMDb synopsis for this week's episode, which is brought to you by the Pod Tower. If you're looking for fun and entertaining DC animated themed podcasts, do we have a YouTube channel for you? Head on over right now to youtube.com/thepodtower and subscribe. And you'll not only get the entire Tim Talk catalog, which covers every single episode of the DCAU, you also get a great podcast brought to you by the Watchtower database and the fine folks over there as they are currently going through the DCAU in air date order. So they are currently reviewing Superman with their Jump on the Batwagon podcast. And then, of course, there's a little little podcast called the DCAU Review, which is also on that podcast channel and features its entire catalog as well, all in one convenient space for your listening enjoyment. That's youtube.com/thepodtower. Head over today and subscribe.
That's right. So this is the synopsis for Flashpoint, which was written by Dwayne McDuffie, directed by Joaquin DeSantos, with music by the Dynamic Music Partners, and animation by DR Movie Co. And that synopsis reads as such. Lex Luthor executes his masterstroke to eliminate Project Cadmus and frame the Justice League.
I like the use of the term masterstroke. Mm-hmm, that's going outside there. It leaves a little bit to be desired. I think you're left wanting a little bit more, you know, because there is a little bit more in depth there. But I'd give it a solid. I think I'd give it a C plus or a B minus.
Yeah, it gets the job done.
For sure.
So as mentioned, we kick things off just right literally where we left it off at the end of the previous episode, Question Authority. Of course, it was Superman and the Huntress had broken into Cadmus' headquarters in order to rescue the Question, who was being tortured there following his stealing several classified documents from Cadmus. And they were confronted by none other than Captain Atom, who has defected, so to speak, and joined up with Cadmus. He was called back into service by General Eiling, as we saw in that previous episode. And the fight is on. We'll certainly have more to talk about in visuals with that. But Superman, Captain Atom going toe-to-toe. Captain Atom using a version of Red Sun energy or radiation to try to weaken Superman in their fight, while Huntress slowly but surely sort of drags the Question out of the facility, Superman handing her his comm link, and she's able to get outside and call in Jean to teleport her and Question out of danger, while Superman, after a long brutal fight with Captain Atom, finally defeats him. But as the Cadmus medical staff rushes in to try to aid Captain Atom, Superman won't even allow them to touch him. And he takes him up and insists that he's still part of the Justice League even after this fight. And so from there, we spend a lot of the rest of this episode up at the Watchtower. Mm-hmm. as we see Question's having a little bit of trouble breathing in his hospital bay, in the med bay, in the Watchtower, and we get a face reveal here.
This is mm-hmm.
We get a big deal. It's like when one of those like AI VTubers puts their face on camera for the first time, but with a weird libertarian right wing superhero. I don't know. I lost the thread there, but it's there.
You were right. I am the ugliest guy of all time.
Not in my eyes. What happened?
Cadmus turned him against us.
No way. He'd never do that.
But he did. And so did Professor Hamilton. Hamilton's working for Cadmus. He's probably the one who
cloned me. Why?
He was afraid of us. I'm sorry, Kara.
Don't be. Just tell me when we're gonna go and shut them down.
One stop first. Wait here.
What's going on?
You got it.
But yes, after the aid of his aerosol spray to remove the mask and undye his hair, as we find out.
Mm-hmm.
We get Question just completely wrecked, swollen and beaten out of hell. And they do a little callback to the double date episode where the Huntress claims that he must cover his face like that because he's the ugliest guy of all time. And he responds that she was right. Is, and she doesn't quite see it that way. And they have a very nice, sweet moment furthering that romance along. And as we see that, we see Supergirl kind of watching over them from outside in the hallway. And it's time for her and Superman to have a little heart to heart. And it's here we get the official stated reveal that, I guess it was technically in the previous episode, but that it was in fact Professor Hamilton who stole Kara's DNA and cloned her all those months ago when Galatea first appeared, and that that he has joined Cadmus because they're afraid of them. And so Superman heads off to the what do they call the main thing in the watchtower that everybody, that John stands at? What is that?
Is it like the Eagle's Nest? Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of like that. It's just like the main watch point.
Right. Whatever you call it.
John's little, is it the deck?
The deck. Yeah, because it's like a ship, right?
Yeah.
It's they go to the deck, and Superman, having just experienced all of this and then reiterating this very emotional and traumatic experience, realizing that one of their closest allies has betrayed them, and perhaps for him more importantly betrayed Kara, he heads to the bridge or the deck or whatever it is, and he wants some answers from John on what they should do next.
And those questions and answers are hotly debated amongst several different Justice Leaguers, as several are present here. It's also worth mentioning that in the conversation between Superman and the question reminds him that he was there trying to kill Lex Luthor because he was trying to prevent the whole Justice Lord storyline from happening, because Question is under the impression that it is inevitable that Superman, that Luthor kills Flash, Superman kills Luthor, and then arms race, Armageddon.
He's gonna be fine, but he needs his rest.
I'll only be a moment.
It's okay, Helena.
What happened, Question? How did Cadmus get a hold of you?
I went to kill Luthor so that you wouldn't be able to.
That's not how we do things.
How do we do things, Superman? Your counterpart killed Luthor. This Luthor is scheming to enrage you.
Doing a pretty good job of it.
Ruining your reputation, turning your friends and comrades against you, creating a superpowered arms race. But you cannot succumb.
I can shut down Cadmus without killing Luthor.
Carry on, then. If you're wrong, it's not like it's the end of the world, right?
He does his best also to remind him that Cadmus has continually been bringing out Superman's darker side, so to speak, and being able to get his goat a little bit. So as this conversation and debate is happening between John and Superman makes it very clear he wants to act without thinking and head down there and kind of fire a shot back at them, pun intended, as we'll see here, and kind of let them know that the Justice League won't stand for this. Jean makes it very clear that he knows that Superman knows better, because he's not just going and doing it, he's talking about it, and they can't do that. They can't act outside of the law in that way. And this brings in Green Arrow and the Flash to kind of offer their own opinions, because you know, the Green Arrow talks about what their role as superheroes and the people that hold the most power, their commitment to upholding the law. And he also points out that Cadmus is in fact a legitimate endorsed part of the U.S. government. It may be secretive, but it's not it's not some rogue villainous organization that they can simply stop and because they believe they're doing injustices. It's different because it's a part of the U.S. government. It's endorsed by the government, which has its own crimes that it commits, and there should be checks and balances to hold the government accountable, but it's not their role to do so. And he also points out that as one of the few members of the Justice League that doesn't have superpowers, that they have a right to fear the Justice League.
We can't let Cadmus get away with it.
No one's saying we should, but we have to keep a cool head.
Do you know what they did to me?
Look, kid. Hamilton's a piece of garbage, and Luthor's worse. But this isn't the way to stop them.
We must also consider the possibility that Cadmus is right to be afraid of us.
What?
And there is strong evidence of Cadmus having legitimate connections to the government.
Maybe to some rogue black ops group. The real government wouldn't get involved in anything like this.
Hey, I'm the only guy in the room who doesn't have superpowers. And let me tell you, you guys scare me. What if you do decide to go marching down there, taking care of whoever you think is guilty? Who could stop you? Me?
So you want the government to have a bunch of superhuman weapons just to keep us in check?
No. I don't know. Yeah. Look, I'm an old lefty. The government must do for people what people can't do for themselves. The people sure can't protect themselves from the likes of us.
We're not talking about the government. We're talking about a shadow cabinet that's taken it upon themselves to eliminate us. They came after us. We have to hit them back hard.
Grammy Flash always used to say the trouble with an eye for an eye is that everybody ends up blind.
So all of this, while all of this is happening, we cut to a very suspicious Lex Luthor who's working on some sort of project in his lab. More to come with that as we talk about in visuals here in a little bit. But he gets a call from Amanda Waller, who is speaking directly to him about the fact that Superman broke out. The question has a lot of information. They were able to get linking Luthor to Cadmus, and that Luthor could soon be implicated with some maybe nefarious type things that he's been involved in. And if he is implicated, that Cadmus won't hesitate to serve him up as a sacrificial lamb, distancing themselves from him. Luthor mentions that he has the pardon from the president, but Waller makes sure that he understands that that only covers past crimes and not new crimes. But Luthor, again, too busy buried in his work, mentions that he has far bigger fish to fry and has something else, believes the Justice League will soon be worried about something else. So then we cut back to the Watchtower, back to the bridge, and the Watchtower, our heroes are still debating kind of what the next steps are. And what did you know? It out of the blue, Luthor, by the way, ended his scene by going to a computer and pressing enter, and a countdown began starting. Before we cut back to the Watchtower, by the way, the Watchtower, as the arguing is continuing, suddenly the lights dim and the computer announces that the binary fusion cannon is preparing to fire.
Well, that would be inconvenient, but I wouldn't worry about the Justice League quite yet. They have problems of their own. Goodbye, Mrs. Waller.
I still think we should go down to Cadmus, take them out, and accept any consequences after the...
Computer, report.
Binary fusion generator initialization sequence in progress.
Abort.
Unable to comply. System locked.
Override. Command Authority 004.
System Administrator John Jones recognized. Unable to comply.
All hands prepare for binary fusion discharge. This is not a drill.
Have to do with the hard way.
Rerouting binary fusion control. Bypassing circuit break.
Does his best to try and override it and shut everything down, and even goes in manually and disconnects a whole bunch of wires. Hey, when all else fails, break something, right? And he tries his best, but I guess the emergency backup powers back on, and the floating space gun known as the Watchtower, or perhaps ripped directly from the headlines, the directed energy weapon, or DEW, as some would call it, fires off And wouldn't you know it, it makes a connected spot right at the Cadmus headquarters, creating a mushroom cloud just outside a major city, and a rather huge crater in the middle of this area. We see the ripple effects happening as buildings begin catching on fire, and there's an earthquake, and things are beginning, water mains begin to break, and lots of chaos ensues in the aftermath of this weapon firing. And suddenly the Justice League realize what's happened, realize that they have to get down there to try and help. Superman and the rest of the Justice League begin trying to form a plan. They are trapped for some time because the power is down due to the firing of the weapon, but they immediately begin sending people out and trying to figure out how they can get out and manually get down there, because their transportation, what do they call that thing, the beam me up Scotty thing,
I think they just say teleporters.
Yeah, the teleporters. Yeah.
What it was called in the comics, but
they're offline because of the power surge, so they're offline. So they're going to take javelins and go down and try and help the situation. Superman, by the way, did try and prevent the cannon, did everything he could to try and prevent the cannon from firing at the last second, but was actually hit by the cannon himself and had to be rescued by Dr. Light shortly thereafter. But back on the watchtower, the phone rings, and it's from a very specific singular phone, and that's never a good sign in whatever movie or television show you're watching. If it's got its own dedicated handheld line, it's probably very important. And the next call between John and the person on the other line is not a friendly one.
That's right. We hear from the President of the United States is now a character on this show.
Mr. President.
Come on. You too, Arrow.
Mr. President, I know this looks bad.
Is that supposed to be some kind of Martian humor?
No, sir.
I need some answers, John. Why exactly did the Justice League destroy a high-security R&D facility?
All appearances to the contrary, the Justice League did not fire the binary fusion weapon.
Sure looked that way from down here.
It was activated remotely by person or persons unknown.
I'd like to believe you, John.
We've never given you any reason to doubt our words, sir.
Even so, I've repeatedly expressed my strongest disapproval of you guys having that space cannon floating over everybody's head.
If we'd had it during the Thanagarian invasion, we might have avoided a great deal of suffering. We don't intend to be caught unprepared a second time.
I don't want to have this argument again. You're not holding a strong hand right now anyway. My people are investigating this incident. You guys have saved the world more times than I've shot under par, so we give you a lot of slack. But if it turns out you are responsible, the full weight of the United States government is coming down on you. Got it?
Understood. Thank you, Mr. President.
The ambiguous 43rd, I guess it would have been, President of the
United States, maybe? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, so he's immediately questioning why exactly the Watchtower's gun was just discharged on this high security facility. And John tries to assure him that there's an explanation, that they were hijacked by person or persons unknown. And the president sort of acquiesces. He says that he wants to believe them because of how often they've saved the world. But he does bring up the fact that the U.S. government has repeatedly questioned that this gun existing at all, and that it's one of the things that'll become a theme a little bit later in the episode. If the gun had not been there, no one could have fired it, sort of thing. And John's comeback is a pretty decent one, and that if they had had it during the Thanagarian invasion, that perhaps things could have gone differently. It wouldn't have been such a dire situation then. So they come to a sort of a stalemate, with the president saying that the government will be investigating, and that if anything is untoward in that investigation, that the full weight of the U.S. government will be coming down on the Justice League. And obviously they right after that, We get a cut to the president and sort of some generic advisors, just all yelling that it's, you know, about different things he should or shouldn't be doing. And his phone rings again, and this time it's or actually it's the first time his phone rang because he called the other time. But his phone rings, and he realizes that it's a call from none other than Amanda Waller, who informs them that they had after Superman had broken in, they had decided to move the facility so that the Justice League ended up firing on an empty building, and but not for lack of trying, it appears that there were no casualties as a result of this cannon. So the president is still not sure. Amanda Waller is very much ready to take action, wants to strike back. It's funny how we'll get to the parallels at the end here, but just little things that I didn't pick up on this as a teenager, I guess, when I watched it, what I was seeing here. But very similarly to the conversation we just heard of the Justice League, the good guys have. Mm-hmm. We are now hearing a very similar conversation between Waller and the president. Waller assuring the president that they need to go. Cadmus is their only option. It's time to go to war, for lack of a better term, with the Justice League. But the president told her to hold off for now, and that he is weighing his options. And in the aftermath, we see Superman still unconscious out in space. Dr. Light, not that one, the female one, brings him back into the Watchtower as the Flash, along with Green Arrow and some others, decide they're going to go down to Earth and help in the disaster relief. And as they're leaving, it's just clear that things are dire, and the Justice League is scrambling to try to restore everything, as mentioned, and kind of looking over the wreckage as the Javelin's flying in. Green Arrow once again lamenting the fact that this is their fault to an extent, and the Flash tries to push back on that, but once again that same issue is risen again, that if this weapon didn't exist, no one could have used it. And so they do have some culpability as a result of that. So as they go to the ground, as mentioned, we get a montage of the Justice League helping people and saving people from disasters. Some fun little cameos that we could talk about from Justice Leaguers. We probably saw in the background of like the first episode, but I haven't really seen in action yet. Yep. Like Booster Gold and Gypsy and Vibe getting some shine here. So some fun little bits here we'll talk about in visuals maybe a little bit more. But in the aftermath of that, we see the Flash run and find there's a child crying because she's lost her cat, and a father's trying to console her. So he finds the cat and brings it to her and shakes the dad's hand and tells her that the dad tells the Flash that they're proud to have these heroes here, and they're so thankful for the help. And the Flash tries to kind of accept that thanks, but then a paramedic sort of speaks up and tells them, kind of reads them the riot act.
It's a rotten situation. I'm glad we could lend a hand.
If you care so much, why did you shoot at us in the first place?
We did.
What do you mean?
First they shoot at us, then they come help us.
It's not that simple, buddy.
I heard it was an industrial accident. Are you saying you did shoot at us?
Well, I saw it. A big laser beam from the sky, just like the one you guys used to shoot those alien spiders in Nevada a few months ago.
It was an accident.
Well, that makes me feel a lot better.
All right, let's calm down. We'd never do anything to hurt you. You have to trust us.
Those ships will move you to a temporary shelter. It's safer.
I'll take my chances.
I'm not sure what I'm doing here anymore.
People need us. We help them.
I mean, a lot of this, as we've talked about, is direct parallel to various U.S. foreign policies over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But here is civilians in the aftermath of a drone strike.
Mm-hmm.
saying, if you cared so much, why did you shoot at us?
Right.
If you care, and Green Arrow tries to stick up for the Flash and say it was an accident and it didn't happen, and the civilians sort of all begin to join in and say that, well, look, all we know is that a beam shot out of the sky. We know it came from you guys because it's the same one you used to shoot the spider robots a few months ago. And now you're standing around trying to act like heroes for coming to help. And so it creates this very uncomfortable situation. Green Arrow is once again sort of left feeling like perhaps he made the wrong decision to stick around as we head to the finale of this middle portion of this final Cadmus arc.
That's right, and we get a brief final scene as we cut back to this government facility, and their General Eiling, Amanda Waller, Professor Hamilton, and who's the fourth guy? He's the
torture guy from
the torture guy. Yeah, the guy that was torturing the question in the last episode. They're all sitting around a table, waiting, hoping that the president is going to call to give them the okay to declare war, or I guess give a final stand down order. And Amanda Waller has no time for this, no time for patience, as she decides she's going to take matters into her own hands. We see her leave the table, walk into another room where it is revealed is a fully healed Galatea is there doing lifts with heavy machinery. And Amanda Waller checks on her to make sure she's full and ready to go. And she says she's more than ready to go on her next mission. And her next mission, per Amanda Waller, is going to be taking on the Justice League, but she's not going to do it alone. She opens up a door and revealed is an army of the Ultimen, various different versions of that that Super Friends homage from a couple of episodes back. But it's just hundreds of them, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these groups of Ultimen ready to go and support Galatea as her soldiers. And that is where this issue or this episode comes to a close, leaving us with another bit of a cliffhanger there. But don't worry, Justice League fans, we'll be back next week with more. So a fun one indeed. Liam, this one sandwiched in, it's interesting kind of following up, I'd say, as we get into our plot scores here. Mm-hmm. Following up, you know, it's been several months since we've reviewed this. I loved that they had the recap at the beginning, just in case you missed it, showing that these episodes really are connected, and it's important and integral to kind of follow along and not miss one of these. But it catches you up real quick. You pick right back up in the middle of this. You have an incredible fight happened right at the beginning between Superman and Captain Atom, and it is it is rough and tumble. It, you know, I put it, but it's probably not quite as brutal as the Captain Marvel / Shazam and Superman fight. I would say that one maybe slightly more brutal, but this one's pretty rough. Lots of lots of closed fists, lots of hard punches, a big big meaty men bumping meat, as they say, right? Just hanging in there, throwing fists, not really holding back. So that's how you kick off the episode, and I think maybe that was done because a lot of the rest of the episode is more dialogue heavy, is more story driven than the rest of the episode. The tension comes from the what's happening with the cannon. Can they shut the cannon down in time? And then we get the tension sort of raise again at the end as we get the reveal of Galatea and her army that's going to go fight the Justice League. But you do have a lot of downbeats in between those spots, so you really kind of have to drive things home with this plot. And as we talked about the last month that we did Justice League Unlimited reviews, these episodes that the late, great Dwayne McDuffie wrote stand up today. They're so layered. They're so just entertaining. I don't know how long it's been since I've seen this episode before we, you know, watched it today. It's been some time though, but just looking at the different topics and the things that are touched on, and we get the position of Green Arrow as he calls himself, an old lefty, like his position and opinion of what the government should be and what it does, why that kind of and how that kind of shapes his outlook on things. and why that influences kind of what his advice is to Superman on how to act. You have Jean kind of just kind of coming in from his own standpoint of like, hey, we're heroes. We this isn't what we do. You have the Flash who points out that Superman is talking more like Batman these days than he is acting like Superman. You know, which is, if you really look at it, is Superman's the dark, gritty guy in these last couple episodes, yeah, we pointed out. It's just so, so layered and so enjoyable to watch. Here I am, I don't know, we said this is 18 years ago. So, you know, as a teenager watching this, you, like you said, you don't pick up on all of the intricacies and the little things that the real world application that, mm-hmm, that Mr. McDuffie was clearly alluding to, and that is still relevant today in a lot of ways, in a lot of discussions. So,
yeah,
it's something like that, that is timeless in so many ways, that still applies today, that you can look at, you can enjoy, that is so layered, man. I'm kind of speechless on how to, how to talk about this.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, 'cause obviously, as we have alluded to, touched on, this is obviously, this was written during the height of, you know, the war on terror, the Bush White House and things like that. But to your point, you know, that's the government's role, U.S. imperialism, overreaching, government overreach, arms races. These are not exclusive to one era of U.S. or world history. And these are still themes and struggles that we as real people deal with in the real world every day. And so to see that put through a superheroic lens like this is really fascinating. And to have, you know, to have the good guys, and it's also, as we see in that little debate, it's like Green Arrow's point is not unfounded, mm-hmm, right? That if there was an evil Justice League that showed up, which there already has been, mm-hmm, they are like an evil Justice League already came into this universe once. Who's going to stop them and somebody's got to.
Right.
So, and on the other hand, you have like, you know, Supergirl in that discussion. She's been literally and figuratively violated, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, by this government agency that's supposed to be protecting people. She wasn't protected.
Right.
She didn't turn evil. She was trying to save the world for when Superman turned evil, if you remember.
Right. Yep.
And as a result, her reward was getting her, you know, her DNA stolen and turned into a clone that tried to kill her. Like, this right. is that's not her fault. Like, none of that was her fault, but now she's been made a victim of this. And so she's not wrong to stand up and go, wait, so you want these guys to be in charge of world defense? These guys that, you know, backbite and lie and cheat and all of these things. Like, there's so many layers to this that feel, and these characters feel like real people having a conversation.
Yeah.
Like, yes, they're all wearing spandex and have, you know, bright primary colors on, but they just feel like real people discussing a real issue. It just happens to be, in that world, it's less about, you know, drone strikes and military interventionism, and it's more about, you know, superheroes and space lasers, which, as you said, even that's not that far out.
Yeah.
So it's just like, the way that this is crafted is fascinating. And then as we talked about during the recap, the parallel of how Superman is talking to Jean and how Waller is talking to the president, mm-hmm, and they're both saying, we don't have time to think. We don't have time to do this the right way. Right. We got to act now. They're the enemy. We've got to stop them right now. They came at us. We got to hit them back hard. I want to say that's like a direct line that either like Donald Rumsfeld or Colin, someone said that in the Bush White House, like, right. Right. Like that's directly ripped from the headlines dialogue, yep, said by Superman.
Yep.
Like it's very powerful. And to see that played off of each other, where the lines are very blurred and there isn't necessarily a, you know, a black and white, a simple answer to this question.
Absolutely.
Is great. And I think that creates a story, and it does, you know, by the end, we know because we've seen the show before. And because it's, you know, at the end of the day, it is a superhero show for kids. Like, we know at the end of the day, Superman's not going to turn bad and murder the president.
Right.
But within this story, it allows you, even now coming back to it as an adult, and probably even more so in some ways, as we've just been discussing, to really get just invested in that conflict in a way that it's just fabulous. Like, it's just amazing. Yeah. The way that this was crafted, and the way that, like, I just keep coming back to the scene where they're all arguing in the watchtower, and nobody's wrong there.
Right. Yeah.
And you go back to the Doomsday Sanction, where, you know, Superman's like, all right, job well done, we did it, gang. And Batman is furious at him.
Mm-hmm.
For, you know, we passed judgment, we sent someone to prison without you know, we passed judgment without, you know, without anyone else having a say. So, like, we are dangerous, they're right to be scared of us,
right?
Like, this continuation. And I know there was some talk, which maybe we can talk later in the month when we get to those episodes, of maybe extending this storyline further beyond this season. And I think the idea was a lot of the non-superpowered characters were maybe going to break off and start their own team, like an Outsiders or something. So I'll be interested to see if it feels like those threads are going back for this rewatch, seeing if those threads are resolved in a way that makes sense, or if it feels more like they were dropped because they decided not to go that direction. But yeah, as it stands, this as like a middle piece, considering it's picking up one cliffhanger and then leaves us on another, it's still so compelling. Like, that 22 minutes, they just, you talk about like maximizing your time. It's, and still giving you some pretty, you know, compelling visuals and a big, you know, knockdown drag out superhero fight to start the episode. Like, this is amazing. Like, the pacing of this is tremendous.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think the thought that I kept coming back to, you know, as you're kind of talking about describing this, is that it shows the grays of politics and military maneuvers and all of that you have, or opposing sides have, I guess, if you look at this and both sides looking from their own perspective and thinking why they're right, how they're right, the actions mm-hmm. that they have to take, why they have to take them, why they're justified in taking them, who's to blame for, you know, for forcing the other one's hand. This is all relevant today. It's completely still relevant. So it plays in those grays. It shows you, it kind of holds that mirror back up. And I don't think, in comparison to like the modern day tropes of edgy superheroes or gritty superheroes or whatever, you know, cliche you want to use, I feel like this doesn't, even though Superman is acting like Batman, it doesn't do it in a cliched way. It feels like he has a legitimate motivation in these moments to feel betrayed. He's betrayed by this person, Emil Hamilton, who he thought was his close friend. They're attacking people and kidnapping people on his team, even though that team feels justified for doing so because he's stolen government secrets from them. So they have a justification and they need to know what he knows. Mm-hmm. And then you have Superman being so furious over all of this. And the fact that not only did they do this, they recruited or seemingly forced Captain Atom back into active duty so that they could have somebody powerful enough to go up against Superman, to be a threat against Superman. So he's even more furious about that. The fact that he comes to such blows that almost break Captain Atom's containment suit, which may have killed him. So he's forced into this. He feels like he's forced into this battle against Captain Atom that nearly killed his friend or somebody that was on mm-hmm. his team. So there's so many different layers. So good. And as you mentioned, like, the fact that it doesn't feel the plot moved along. It doesn't feel like a filler episode. You picked up one thread. You're continuing the thread. You don't have a ton of actual visual fisticuffs in the episode, minus that first opening scene. The rest of it is very dialogue, very story driven as far as the tension is concerned. Tension is literally taken to the next level by people deciding whether or not they're going to go take action and fight somebody else. That's where our tension lies for the episode. It's written so incredibly well. The different scenes of interaction between the different superheroes and kind of the conjecture, as you said, the mirror between that and the government side of things, it's done just so well. I had no choice but to give plot a perfect 10 out of 10 for this episode.
Yeah, same here. Like we said, it's just, like I said, considering it's like I just said, that it's, you fit so much in the middle, keeping in mind that this is sandwiched, the Cadmus arc is obviously longer than these next few episodes, but if you just look at the through line from Question Authority to Divided We Fall, like that's such a, it's just this one kind of continuous story. There aren't really any time jumps between that. So the fact that this, like I said, starts cleaning up a cliffhanger from the previous episode, ends with its own cliffhanger, and it's still so compelling and so interesting as a standalone piece, is it's amazing. So as we talked about the late great Dwayne McDuffie, just a spectacular writer, spectacular person, especially when it came to injecting these real life themes into these superhero stories, phenomenal.
All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be animation and visuals. And as you mentioned at the top, DR Movie Co. responsible for our animation for this week. And our direction, the episode was directed by Joaquin Dos Santos.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Mr. Dos Santos, by the way, he's also a director of a little film called Across the Spider-Verse that came out this year.
No way.
Yeah. Like one of the lead directors on that project. And I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of artists and visual effects people that worked on that movie, but he's credited as one of the directors on there. So another guy who cut his teeth in the world of the DCAU and then went on to create entire worlds all his own, and worked on maybe the most spectacular, like from an engineering standpoint, I think from an accomplishment standpoint, maybe the most spectacular animated film I've ever seen. So yeah, just an incredibly talented guy.
Yeah, he's done some great things. Obviously, I think maybe most memorably known for his fight sequences, as we'll talk about here. Mm-hmm. According to the DCAU wiki, and they're never wrong, he's earned the nickname Dr. Fight. as a colloquialism for him to based on his ability to direct and choreograph some fantastic battle scenes. So this one is no exception, as we see just an incredible knockdown, beatdown, drag out fight, as we mentioned, really brutal, lots of incredible fists being thrown, Superman being thrown head first into a wall. We have Captain Atom, as we said, his containment suit getting nearly damaged so much that it nearly breaks. And mm-hmm. Superman, I dubbed it in mixed martial arts. You have the ground and pound, where the guy is up on one guy and the other guy's on his back, and the guy's on top and he's just beating the tar out of him, you know, raining down fists on him. Superman, I think, is responsible for the wall and pound, as he just jams Captain Atom into a wall, and then they cut to this sequence of him just raining fists down onto Captain Atom's head. Quite a brutal fight between the two of them, and certainly worth mentioning the action that takes place in that scene. Is as I said, the rest of the episode isn't without its interesting visuals. It's just, this is where we get the main portion of our action for the episode.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the big attribute. They're smashing through walls, as you said, they're the bit, it's towards the end of the fight where he takes like a piece of rebar or whatever from the wall and ties it around Captain Adam's hands to try to curb the energy blast. And then Captain Adam responds by doing the Dragon Ball Z, right? You like put the hands together and then unleash the energy that way instead. And the fight keeps going for a little bit longer. The physical damage, considering, you know, maybe not as strict as the old, you know, Fox Kids days, but there's still rules about blood and such. So the lacerations and marks all over Captain Adam's suit is a good way to visualize the tough battle there as well. So yeah, that sequence is great. Also, when he takes his mask off, his face is just destroyed. There are broken orbital bones and jaws and a lot wrong with him.
But talk about an MMA fight.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yes. This guy is messed up, but I would be saying, I mean, we already talked about it in the plot, but the visual, like the, how loving Huntress and Question are in that scene in the hospital bed.
Yeah.
I think it's so nice. Like the way that like she grabs his hand and then the way he kind of like sort of sheepishly looks away when she takes the mask off and he says, you know, I'm the ugliest guy of all time. And she just kind of looks back at him with a really nice smile on her face. Like, it's just, yeah, like even like the smaller emotional beats of this episode, I think have an extra little flourish in them. And then as mentioned, the other big action, I guess, of the episode is we see, you know, first we see the beam go down and destroy the facility and the big explosion in the crater. That looks fantastic. And then coming out of the, I guess, what would have been the commercial break, we just see the start of these tremors, and we see, you know, kids at a playground and people walking in the street, and, you know, somebody eating lunch at a cafe. And then everything starts to rumble and then the kind of the tremors begin and the earthquake starts and buildings begin to crash and the car alarms are going off. Like just the chaos of that sequence is really something as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the fact that they set it up, cause they could have just easily shown you the aftermath, right? The giant crater, the fires and the car alarms, and you would have understood, you know, what had happened. But to really drive home, again, we're talking, this episode came out just 4 years after, you know, the events of September 11th here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And people had seen sort of the juxtaposition of the sunny blue skies of that day that were suddenly disrupted when when planes hit the towers and the buildings ended up falling, and just the chaos that ensued after that. So I feel like maybe some of that was trying to capture that aftermath. And to your point also, you know, the aftermath of when a bomb drops, or when, you know, a city has come under attack in a military conflict, it's mm-hmm. kind of giving you that same, hey, things are kind of just ordinary here. We're not expecting anything. And then out of nowhere, life is just kind of flipped upside down. So the fact that you had the two, you know, mirror opposites of these sequences here, where at the beginning, walking dogs and birds chirping and everything like that, and then after the beam hits and all this, the earthquakes happen, and you know, the water mains are breaking and the streets are coming undone and bridges are collapsing, and the aftermath is this smoking giant crater in the ground. It really hammers home that idea that, man, these innocent people, their lives are never going to be the same after this. So felt like that was a good job of capturing that with those visuals. Also, I will say there were, I don't know if it's with DR Movie Co or maybe whoever was storyboarding this episode, there were some weird choices as far as kind of like low angle shots that were kind of up people's chins and noses. We got a couple of those with Superman at times. And Martian Manhunter looked a little off model at times. So I did take a point or two off for that. People looking a little bit off model and kind of out of the ordinary. It was a little bit distracting, especially when you don't have a lot of visual action to kind of fill in the gaps here when it is a lot of standing around and talking. And even some of the way that, like, when Green Arrow's giving his speech on the Watchtower, he's kind of like not, it almost looks like he's not making eye contact with the rest of the group. He's kind of like looking down. And I don't know if that was to communicate like a sort of shame in the responsibility that they have as the League, or, you know, it, because it doesn't, it didn't feel like he should be shy in that moment. He's speaking up, like he's making his opinion known as the, you know, one of the few members that doesn't have superpowers to share his opinion and thought. Not only that, but his opinion on what the role of the government should be and why they need to make sure that they're keeping the superheroes in check and all of this. So I don't know if that was intentional, if it was just a weird storyboarding choice, but it kind of didn't feel like it fit what that character's speech was going for in that moment. So I felt, again, nitpicking a little bit here, but running through a couple of highlights that I did like. I love, of course, we know now, with the benefit of hindsight, what Lex Luthor is working on in that one scene. But there is a little Easter egg. If you look, did you catch the Easter egg?
I don't know if I did.
On the side of the machine that he's working on is the very familiar three dotted symbol. It's not connected, but it is the Brainiac symbol on the side of it. The dots are not connected, but they're in that little, that three dot V shape, or triangle shape, if you will.
I missed that completely.
Yeah, it's very subtle. It's there. But I was like, man, is there anything here indicating? Yep, sure is. Right on the side there, kind of hiding in plain sight, is this little three dots. So kind of giving you a little foreshadowing there. You gotta love that. The return of the Justice League spacesuits also. We hadn't seen those for a while. The classic Justice League spacesuits, I should say, not the newfangled ones that they did for the return.
That's right.
Amazo. These are the gold and silver standard issue spacesuits, I guess. It's cool that they broke those back out. I like seeing that. Mm-hmm. And there was also one final subtle moment, speaking of little homages and maybe foreshadowing. This one definitely more of an homage, but the reveal of Galatea as she's doing her workouts, lifting up the heavy machinery over her head and doing deadlifts with them. She after she's done her workout and walking along with Amanda Waller, she pulls out a red towel that she drapes over her shoulder, kind of giving her that look of the classic Power Girl red cape that she models. It's just for a second, and it's a kind of a blink and you miss it thing. She doesn't actually wear it like a cape, but it does drape over her shoulder in a way that I was like, I don't think that was on accident. So, I think this is a solid episode, not a lot of action to go off of. I did think some of the points of view and the camera angles were a little bit odd as far as why they went kind of low angle shots on some of the, some of the heroes. So I took a couple points off from that, but overall I ended up going with and mainly on the back of that opening fight, I went with a 7 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I went just one point higher for 8 out of 10, just because I think that opening fight and then the scene in the with the damage being done to the city, and then, like we said, the sort of homage of some of the lesser known Justice Leaguers out there saving lives, I thought was pretty spectacular. And then even some of the smaller moments, like, you know, it's kind of a theme, as we'll see in next week's episode as well, that Galatea maybe, her bark's a little bigger than her bite. She's sort of in a fake it till you make it mode, and like she's trying to show off how powerful she is, and so she's lifting this gigantic weight machine with one arm, but then if you look, you just see her arm shaking just a little bit, like it's just like one or two, it just twitches a little bit before she drops it, and just showing off that she likes to show off. She wants everyone to think she's in control, but maybe there's a little bit of a few cracks in the armor, so to speak. So I liked that. Like I said, a lot of small visual things that I think add up here to a pretty strong score from both of us.
There you go. Do we run down the full list of who was the extras there that didn't get?
Let's do it. Yes. So we have not non-voiced appearances in this episode from Vixen, Vibe, Steel, Rocket Red, The Ray, Nemesis, Gypsy, Elongated Man, Dr. Light, Dove, Booster Gold, and the Atom.
There you go. A nice list of background fillers there. Some people that had former speaking parts, but didn't
quite. I mean, this is the Vibe. I mean, this is pre the Flash show. This is Vibes. Like, this was his biggest mainstream moment here, outside of like the Justice League Detroit comics of the later 90s. Like,
they let him do something too. He was like picking up pieces of the bridge or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So yeah, that the fact that they also, it wasn't just like them standing around, all of them are actually kind of moving and they get to kind of feature some of their powers is kind of cool.
Yeah, Elongated Man making himself a slide for people to slide down where the firefighters are waiting was a neat touch. And yeah, we see Booster flying in and out of buildings. I'm not familiar with Gypsy. She's not really a character that's been around in our lifetimes, I feel. Mm-hmm. I think she might have also been on the Justice League Detroit, which like followed the international run in the 90s. But like, I guess she can walk through walls because she does it in this episode.
Yeah, according to the DCAU wiki, she never exhibited that power in the comics. So they may have just made up the power for the show.
Sure.
But I can neither confirm nor deny that. So any huge fans of this character whose name may or may not be canceled, I'm not sure. I've heard that recently.
I don't think that's the term for.
I don't think it's politically correct these days to refer to a particular group of people that way. But I think
correct.
I think this character's name is this. So we're just gonna stick with that.
Correct.
Please don't cancel
us. Factually stating.
That's right.
The character's name, not endorsement.
That's correct. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music, which is, of course, provided by the Dynamic Music Partners for this week. And hey, there were actually some pretty interesting notes that I had taken here for music, but I will see if any of them overlap with anything that you had written down. What did you have?
I think the biggest part I had was, as we just finished talking about that sequence where the Justice Leaguers are helping with the disaster relief, that sequence, there's sort of a montage. There's really not any dialogue, and there's really not even much in the way of sound effects. So it's pretty much just music. Mm-hmm. And it's everyone, you know, it's very solemn as we're watching, you know, Booster Gold go through a building and pick people up and take them down. And the people, like I said, sliding down Elongated Man and Vibe and Gypsy and Rocket Red and whoever else we see kind of just flying around. It's very somber. It's very solemn. You know, we see the Flash running around as well, but it's they just kind of let the music and the visual language speak for it. There's not any dialogue. So I thought the music accompanying these, as you said, very much invoking, you know, real life disasters that had recently, you know, faced the world. The music adds a ton to that scene, I thought.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And even right before that, when the direct energy weapon, or as some may call it, or the or the watchtower, as the weapon fires, there is just kind of this haunting music that plays that has this chorus or choral undertone of it, with these voices that kind of feed into the haunting, oh my goodness, what just happened? You know, what type of destruction? Did the Justice League just murder all of these government agents? Or did the Watchtower just murder all of these government agents? It kind of builds that tension in that. And then again, the somber note of them kind of trying to help the cleanup as they're going around. Yeah, those kind of play off each other very, very well, because it really brings the tone of this, you know, no, there are no winners in war. Yeah. I guess so I did enjoy that. I think the fight scene, of course, between Superman and Captain Atom, you have some good standard fight music that's happening there, some good fare. It is more of the synthesizer, and you know, we've moved past live music, it's more of the synthesizers, but doing what they can to certainly to accentuate the action that you're seeing on the screen. I like when the Question and the Huntress are talking. They're sort of, I don't know if it's a Question theme, but it is a musical piece that I associated with previous appearances of the mm-hmm. Question. So I'll just call it the Question theme. It does play in sort of a somber, sad note as they're kind of sitting there and Superman or as they're having this conversation before Superman walks in, this romantic moment, and especially he drops the line of being the most ugly person alive, and she says, "Not in my eyes." And then it kind of plays that somber theme before Superman comes in. I think the last musical note that I had that really I felt added an exclamation point to the scene was the Galatea. The crescendo of the Galatea and Waller walking into and revealing the Ultimen army, as you kind of get this haunting theme that plays as you realize that, oh, this is going up another level here, as not only is the U.S. government going to take a step here to declare war on the Justice League, but they're not just sending this one superpowered individual. They have an army of drones to go after with them. So the cliffhanger, you have these spotlights coming down visually on the different groups of the Ultimen, and then you know, fade to black here, really brings that tension, gives you the cliffhanger feel, let's get on to the next episode type of idea here, you know, oh no, I can't wait for next week, like giving you that feel. So I thought the music was pretty strong for this week. I think it played in the right notes and where it needed to be quiet and somber. It was when it needed to add a little bit more tension, it did. So for all those reasons, I ended up giving it a 8 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I went just 1 point lower at 7 out of 10. But I still think it's really strong. If I think you touched on it, but yeah, there's the moment where the countdown starts, the computer raises out of the ground, and the countdown for the laser blast is about to start. And, you know, Jean's trying to fight it and finally tries to override it. It doesn't work. So he pulls the wires out and everything stops. Like there's no sound for a second. And there's almost like an exhale. And then it's rerouting power and everything boots back up and the music just rushes back in and it's like even more frantic and fast tempoed than it was before. And that added a lot to how unnerving that sequence is. And then as the music sort of quickens, then you see Superman realize there's no other way and, you know, dive out and fly out crashing through the wall of the watchtower to go try to stop it at the last second. That's just really, really, really great example of how the music can just make you can add in to that emotion that you're already feeling based on, you know, the plot and the visuals and the dialogue.
All right, Liam, let's move on to our final category of the day, which is going to be our voice actors. We have a medium-sized cast to talk about today. A lot of series regulars here, not too many listed here on the special guest list, but some really, really important, heavy dialogue-driven, as we talked about. A lot of dialogue, a lot of intense moments, a lot of important conversations happening here. So that means a lot of the weight went on our voice cast. So let's break down their performances for this week.
Yeah, so really our only guest star, or guest star we hadn't heard from before, is Robert Forster as the president. Folks would know him from things like Jackie Brown. He has a big role in that. And then he's the guy that helps people disappear on Breaking Bad. He's like the hardware store owner that he has a very memorable, like he's only in one or two episodes, but it's very memorable for that series towards the end of that. No longer with us, unfortunately, passed away in a few years ago. But another character actor that you saw him, you'd know him, and he has a pretty recognizable voice too. But great gravitas as the president of a TV show president. Like if we didn't mention it, like so much of this feels like if they weren't in superhero costumes, this is like an episode of The West Wing or something. Like it's very like. it's so dripping with that like dramatic tension in all the dialogue. It feels, you know, it feels very like Aaron Sorkin, mm-hmm. you know, network television drama, political drama. Like it's
absolutely,
and he's good in that way. And then we have, of course, our more frequent guest cast. We have Kin Schreiner as the Green Arrow. I'm just going to run him down fast, and then we can kind of talk about what stands out to us. Kin Schreiner is the Green Arrow, Nicole Tom is Supergirl, Jeffrey Combs is the Question, Amy Acker as Huntress, Chris Cox as Captain Atom, and then our main original Justice Leaguers, we have three this week. We, of course, have Carl Lumbly as Martian Manhunter, Michael Rosenbaum as the Flash, and finally, George Newbern as Superman. So this, as you said, other than our opening fight scene, this is a lot of dialogue. A lot of it falling on the shoulders of George Newbern, Kin Schreiner, Carl Lumbly, and of course, CCH Pounder as Amanda Waller, maybe being the heaviest lifters, but some big moments for, I think, Nicole Tom as Supergirl as well. Like, it's just a really well-rounded, again, we talked about them maximizing their minutes from a plot standpoint. I feel like everybody who talks in this episode has something important to say, if that makes sense.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, even breaking down as some of the smaller pieces, the Michael Rosenbaum is the Flash. He has that one line talking to Superman about how he's acting like Batman. Like, that's a mm-hmm. very memorable line. He doesn't have a ton to say. He also has the responsibility of trying to like defend the Justice League and try and prove to these people that they're not the bad guys. Mm-hmm. You have the great Kin Schreiner, who's, you know, again, has this little kind of tiny speech that he gives about, you know, about being his political stance and why he believes that mm-hmm. the government has the right to do what they're doing. But then also has this kind of like this other downer moment where he's kind of put in the middle of this argument between the citizens and the superheroes, where he kind of doesn't even realize what he's doing there anymore, as he says. So yeah, there's some emotional beats that these characters are called upon to do, even in these brief little dialogue bits that they have, that I feel like they knock out of the park. And then you have, of course, you have the bigger conversations. You have, you know, Superman and the Question having this heart to heart where, you know, Jeffrey Combs has to deliver these lines talking about, you know, again, reiterating this idea that he believes that Superman ultimately has it in him to kill, mm-hmm. to kill Lex Luthor. Superman doing his best to try and paint himself as the hero that would never do that. But again, the Question really not believing that this is, or believing that this is inevitable. And I love the little line that he throws out at the end. It's, you know, what's the difference? It's not like it's the end of the world. Am I right? Mm-hmm. He just like he so coldly and callously says that to Superman as he's leaving, delivered with just perfect essence there. And you mentioned the Mr. Combs with Miss Acker as the Huntress, mm-hmm. their continued, you know, love story, kind of blossoming romance type of relationship there really felt warm. George Newbern playing off Carl Lumbly's John Jones, as you know, as he's furious and John kind of has to play, you know, bring him down to metaphorical earth in this case here. Like, hey, like we can't be up here. We can't act on our emotions. We have to be calm, cool, and collected, which of course, every line that Carl Lumbly gave as John seemed to come off as that gentle, calm, peaceful character. So there's a lot of stuff. And then you have CCH Pounder working with Clancy Brown and mm-hmm. you know, her lack of patience and her kind of seeing an opening here to kind of move forward with what she believes is getting rid of this threat that she sees in the superheroes, and moving forward to eliminate the Justice League. Has that sinister beat to it, but also the bit of fear that she has in her voice when she's explaining to the president. It's all fantastic. I think everybody did a great job. And not last but not least, Nicole Tom as Supergirl, you know, going through and kind of giving her opinion of what it feels like when she realizes that Emil Hamilton betrayed mm-hmm. her. All of that done incredibly well. I didn't find anybody bad, wrong. I thought everybody was phenomenal this week. which is why I ended up giving voice acting also a perfect 10 out of 10.
Yeah, same score for me. It's hard to argue with when you laid it out there. Yeah. Again, like you said, even the smaller players, you know, Michael Rosenbaum hitting that line at the end after Superman's hit his line about they came at us and we got to hit them back hard. And he kind of throws out the old cliche of, you know, the trouble with an eye for an eye is everybody ends up blind. Like, mm-hmm. But it's such a perfect way to kind of cut through this sort of very, you know, very macho reactionary talk that everybody has in that episode. And him and Green Arrow in different ways, sort of being the voices of reason among this very sort of frustrated Superman. And yeah. And Carl Lumbly, man, he's so like Jean is, you know, and they kind of make that a storyline in the last season of Justice League, that he's kind of intentionally put himself on the back burner. But that scene where the president calls him, he's so good in that.
Yeah.
Like the way he's so like, he's contrite and he's calm, and you can tell that this is, you know, this is tough for him, but he's also kind of trying to stand firm and say, you know, if we'd had that gun when the Thanagarians invaded, we could have saved so many more lives and all this. Like he's sorry, but he's firm and just got. He should have won an Emmy for Falcon and Winter Soldier. They nominated Don Cheadle for some reason, even though he was in one scene of that show. Anyway, I'm not over it.
Yep, that's okay.
But he's spectacular in this episode.
This is a place for your soapbox to live. Don't worry.
This is a place where I think it's safe for me to say that Carl Lumbly is a spectacular actor. And
yeah. And deserves his flowers. Absolutely.
Right.
You're absolutely right. And you know, we have some more episodes coming up here where we will be able to sing more of his praises, and we'll take every opportunity mm-hmm. that we get to do so, as we do with almost everybody here in the cast. So, yeah, a reflected in both of our scores, another home run here from voice cast, our voice caster, Andrea Romano, with just knowing the right direction to give to people. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, pulling the talent out of the immense talent that all these people had, to begin with. So, yeah, way to go, everybody.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam, let's total up our scores now that we're wrapping the episode up. And I think we'll end up probably either the same or in the neighborhood of each other, as we are often wont to do. But totaling up all of my scores, I end up with a 35 out of 40. What about you?
Yep, I end up with the exact same score, even though I don't think we perfectly agreed in every category. We were plus one or minus one in a couple, but that ends up with the final score. So this one does just leave itself just barely outside of the top pick section, but you know, which we give to all of our 36 or higher episodes. But suffice to say, like we said, this is such a linchpin episode for this entire arc, but really especially for this like four part finale of, you know, Question Authority through Divided We Fall. Really, the finale is for this season is epilogue, but we'll That's the final episode ever of this podcast, by the way. So that's not one we'll be getting to anytime soon. So this one through Divided We Fall is such a connected story. So this is an obvious double thumbs up, because as we've just been talking about for the last hour, not only is it a great episode as far as, you know, moving the plot along, getting us from point A to point B, but doing it in just a spectacular and fascinating way.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you can't, it's undeniable. It's mm-hmm. it's a must watch. It's integral to the DCAU. It's integral to this show. It's integral to those four parts. You can't skip this one. So, and it's just a really good episode. So yeah, it's two thumbs up. If I had an extra thumb, I would give it up also. But alas, I do not. All right, Liam, let's begin to wrap things up here. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget, if you would like to support the podcast, You have a myriad of different ways to do so. We will run through those very quickly. You can, of course, support us by following us on social media at DCAU Review. We are on all major social media platforms. You know, the normal ones, Instagram, formerly known as Twitter, now X, and a couple of other ones as well. So find us on there at DCAU Review. You can also support the podcast by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. If it's a traditional podcast app like Apple Podcasts or Spotify, leave us a 5-star review. If you do listen on Apple Podcasts and you can leave a little blurb about what you like about the podcast, please do so. And if you do, take a screenshot of it. Send it to us in our DMs, and we'll be sure to thank you, give you a shout out, and I might have a little special gift to send you as well. You can also support the podcast monetarily if you'd like to. There's links in the show notes. One way is to subscribe to the podcast monthly with a monthly donation. We have some listeners that do that we're incredibly thankful for, that buy me and Liam coffee every single month. So we're incredibly thankful for that. Mm-hmm. And also buy a piece of merchandise if you'd like to. There's a link to the store there to buy a shirt or a mug or a hat or something, a sticker, get something to support and rock DCAU Review. We appreciate that. Liam, we are continuing here. Oh, last way, of course, we mentioned at the top, you can, of course, subscribe to us on the Pod Tower on YouTube. Do that and you get some great content from other DCAU content creators. Liam, we are continuing here in our month of Justice League reviews, and I have a feeling I know where we're going next, but just in case you're not quite sure, what episode will we be reviewing next week?
That's right, Cal. And next week, we will be picking up directly where this one leaves off with the episode aptly titled, for a couple of reasons, which we'll chat about next week, Panic in the Sky.
It is going to be a good one. You are not going to want to miss it. If you have missed any of our Cadmus story arc podcast thus far, why don't you take the opportunity this week and head back in the archives and check those out. You can search on your favorite podcast app. Just search for JLU, DCAU. You'll find it that way. Catch on up. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.